water sources. You know, look at its push for privatization of water. How can we get the food out of people's hands? Look what they did with milk, with homogenizing it, right? Farmers didn't have to get the expensive equipment, these big bulk tanks that they have to get now. That's expensive stuff to run, and you got to keep the refrigeration running and all that great stuff. Yeah, some people, look, people get sick from food, but people get sick from food from the processes that we have nowadays. I've had milk straight out of the bulk tanks at the farms before it's been treated for anything. It's good stuff. It's really, really good stuff. So is this, are people going to try to take advantage of this bird flu to use it as a ruse to, like, my Grace and I, we've got backyard chickens and turkeys. Are they going to come and take them away from us? Are they going to say, look, you can only get your chickens and your turkeys from these big industrial-based farms that the money off? You know? So take it for what it's worth. I don't know. All right, coming up to the top of the hour here again, another wonderful action-packed Sunday evening with you folks. This has been great. Don't forget, right up after us is All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. And I guess I'm just going to kind of leave you with this question. With everything that's going on, what are you going to do about it? Really, what do you have in mind doing? You know? Are you just going to sit back and take it? Or are you going to get up off your ass, get active in your community, change things, leave your kids a better world than what you were born into? Good night, all. It's been great.
It's not just news. It's so much more. It's All Things. Now, here's your host on the Head On Radio Network, Bruce Birch.
All right, thank you, Bob. This is Bruce Birch, and I am here live with you again one more week for All Things Reconsidered, or I should say All Things with Bruce Birch. You know, I wanted to toss this out to, I was talking with a couple of people, and I'm getting some conflicting ideas on this, and I want to do a poll tonight. Maybe we'll do this as we get some telephone calls coming in. By the way, if you do want to call in, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. On to All Things here with yours truly, Bruce Birch. Kind of been an interesting weekend. I've been struggling a little bit with a chest cold kind of thing, but I think I've got enough of pressure there to push the pipes tonight. Before we get too far along, though, I wanted to, do our little housekeeping dance tonight, and that is that we have our stream is brought to you courtesy of the White Rose Society. Oh, okay, that was interesting. I think I heard a message there, Bob. I don't know what that was. But, the housekeeping stuff. White Rose Society, we are being streamed live on White Rose Society. You can go to that website by going to whiterosesociety.org. And Ben's doing a fundraising drive, and it looks like he's pretty much almost there. So just one more small push will get him over the top to take care of his fundraising for the quarter so that he can continue to bring us the fantastic radio programming that he does. Ben Archives, Mike Malloy, you name it, Tom Hartman, Bob Kincaid, myself, Fourth Estate Radio, just all kinds of neat programming. And actually, also, starting tomorrow, he will be streaming live from 3 until 5 p.m. He will be streaming Guy James. And Guy James is out of Florida and was broadcasting on a radio station down there in a very heavily Republican area, and they kicked him off the air. I guess they got tired of hearing some truth. So Guy James will be back on the air tomorrow. We'll be streaming live 3 to 5 p.m. via the White Rose Society. You can go there to find out about that information. Also, this radio program is brought to you under the auspices of the Head On Radio Network. You can go to headonradionetwork.com. And if you go there, you'll find, you go right to the front page, you will see that we have a show post up for tonight's show, the first one we've done there. And, you know, I'd love to hear, you know, if you have any comments about the program and you want to log in there and leave your comments on that blog, feel free to. We'd love to hear from you. And actually, we already have a caller on the line, and this would be Gene from Oregon on line one. Gene, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, Bruce. How's it going?
I'm doing great, man. Well, I said I was doing great. I've got a bit of a chest cold, but I'll be okay.
Well, I'm sorry. I just came in from the Portland protest marking the third anniversary of the war.
That's great. You got your feet on the street. How did it turn out down there?
Oh, well, according to the portland.indiamedia.org, they had somewhere between 30,000 and 50,000 people downtown.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So it was
30,000 and 50,000.
Yes, that's what it said. So that's the headline that's on the front page there. You can go check it out. Like I say, portland.indiemedia.org. There was a police presence.
I'm sure there was.
In a helicopter.
Oh, really?
As far as I could tell, there was no violence. There were two incidences, maybe two and a half, where other people actually kind of confronted, but it was kind of pathetic. Although the guy with the loudspeaker saying, get the F out of our town, was, you know, a little obnoxious. But all in all, it wasn't too bad. After the protest, I was coming home and I actually saw on the front page of USA Today, the headline was Prayers, Fears, Nation Unsettled. I couldn't tell you whether that's the Sunday paper or the Saturday paper. I didn't stop to pick it up because I was, like I said, my batteries were dying and I had to get to a bus quick.
Sure.
But we got people out there. So if there's anybody else in Portland that knows more about this than I do, which is probably a whole lot of people, please give these guys a call and let them all know just exactly all what went down. Probably there's still stuff going on down by the waterfront, but I just didn't get there. So.
Yeah, they said, actually on the Portland Indie Media site, it does say that there are some sort of entertainment at Waterfront Park down there. But that's amazing, man. 50,000, report from Pioneer Square at 3:48 this afternoon said that there are marchers have been passing for more than an hour. There may be 30,000 people present. That's just amazing.
Oh, yeah. So, and there were lots of cameras out there, and I'm sure we made the local news. Although I haven't seen a TV, so if I see anything on the K2 website or something like that, I'll send it on to y'all.
Yeah, please do. I'm one that believes very, very strongly in demonstrating and exercising your right to free assembly. And, I have myself attended many rallies. So anytime that I hear about stuff like this going on, I'd love to hear about it. Gene, did you go down with some friends or did you just go down by yourself?
I went down by myself, actually. I was going to try and go down with my church today, but I had kind of a minor emergency, so I had to do that first. So when I got there, I was actually an hour late.
Wow.
So I ended up marching, you know, by myself with no signs. There were at least three different demonstration groups. We had guys there dressed out in orange with the black hoods. We had some cheerleaders doing political cheers. Then when I was up, because I saw at 3:48 or so, I was up in the mall on the Sky Bridge there on 4th Avenue, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And the street was just filled with people, and I couldn't see either end of it. So, but I did actually stay long enough to see the actual end of the parade, and they had people decked out in white, sheets mimicking the dead, and it was brought up by the tail and by a couple of hearses. So I think we made a point. And
well,
like
fantastic. That is great.
Yeah,
that you guys did that. There was also one here in North Carolina, and actually at Fayetteville, which is right where Fort Bragg is.
Uh-huh.
So there was actually a demonstration there yesterday, but I think the majority of demonstrations were yesterday.
Oh yeah.
So this is interesting that you guys did that. Hopefully that'll help this demonstration to stand out some from the rest.
Yeah. So.
But
it was pretty packed.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm glad that people got out of their houses, and what was the weather pretty good there?
Actually, yes. And for a change, it was partly cloudy with probably it's around 60 degrees.
Well, that's great, man.
So for Portland, that was good.
Well, I appreciate the call. Gene, anything else you want to share with us tonight?
Not at this time, other than just let's keep the pressure up, because even though we were able to turn out people, these guys ain't going to be gone till we have to kind of drag them out kicking and screaming.
Absolutely. Well, and time will tell on how that will go. But if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, getting out in the streets and speaking our minds and letting our feet do our action, then we're doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Mm. You have a good night, Bruce.
Okay, you too, Gene. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
That was Gene from Portland, apparently. Wow, I'm looking at this website, portland.indymedia.com. Which is indie with a Y, indiemedia.org, and according to this, there's a lot of different varied numbers as far as what the people that were present there today. But I'd love to see some pictures from this sometime. I guess there'll be some posted here eventually. I know that the latest news report from there was about 40 minutes ago. So, yeah, you go check that out. It sounds like they had a great event out there today, and I'm glad Gene called us to let us know about that event, because a lot of times, these won't get covered by the mainstream media. Why? Because it's in opposition to the war machine, and the war machine is fueled by, GE owns NBC. GE also, is caught up in the middle of making weapons of mass destruction. So there you go. Kind of slight conflict of interest. I was doing, taking care of a few of the little odds and ends on this front. You can also, I was telling you about the blogging. If you want to go to headonradionetwork.com, you can go and sign up there and actually become a blog participant and comment on the show as we're doing the show. And you can also go to allthingsreconsidered.org to find out more about this radio program. Boy, what a week it's been. And, the rallies and the marches and all the stuff that's been going on around the country, there were, according to the American Friends Service Committee, there were 457 different events around the nation yesterday. And I got to tell you, that stuff, is just fantastic. Can't say any bad words. But... that is just amazing. And if you are one of those people, if you're listening to this program and you're one of those people that went out and put your feet on the street and made it happen, thank you. From all things with Bruce Birch, I thank you. Because you know what? That's where the tide gets turned and that's where the opinions get formed, is when people turn on their television or pick up their newspaper or turn on their radio and they discover that there are thousands of people out there who think just like they do. That there are thousands of people out there that are marching, that are putting their feet on the street and making their actions follow what their words are saying. So if you are one of those people, thank you for doing that so very much. you know, and it's my hope. And I'll have a couple of stories on tonight related to the whole situation in Iraq and what the generals have been saying and what the president's been saying and, you know, what the vice president, you know, oh, God, that vice president of ours, what he's been mumbling. I think we're going to call him Mumbles from now on. Mumbles Cheney.
I just think that's what we need to call him from now on, Mumbles. Mumbles Cheney.
So we'll do that, and you know, we'll get to some of those other news items later on in the program. But, you know, it has been a fantastic weekend. Now, thank you, Gene, for calling in. You know, the first story that I actually wanted to get to, and it'll take just a minute, is the fact that Clinton, now here we go with the mighty Clinton. This is the mighty female Clinton. It's about time that a story like this came out. Now, this is out of Newsday.com, and I don't know if this is, you know, I think it's a fairly right-wing newspaper, but let me just read part of this to you. This is by Mark Humbert, and he's an AP political writer. This was actually yesterday, 12:30, came out yesterday, in Albany, New York. It wasn't so much the 9 votes, it was the applause that told the story. Hillary Rodham Clinton's continued refusal to call for a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq has left her with 2 long-shot opponents challenging her for the Democratic Senate nomination this year. More problematic is the discomfort the stance is causing among many of her supporters. That was evident at a gathering of the state's Democratic Rural Conference earlier this month at a hotel on the Cornell University campus in Ithaca. The conference is made up of party activists from the 41 counties of the state that are not part of the New York City region or the state's more urban upstate counties. In other words, the more conservative Democrats of New York State. Featured at the event was a straw poll that Saturday of delegates for the various statewide races, including the U.S. Senate. Clinton spoke to the delegates Friday night and, as expected, received a rousing welcome. It didn't hurt that the state comptroller, Alan Hevesi, pumped up the crowd by calling on the delegates to work hard for her reelection. Now, let me just read this very direct part. The next morning, the delegates got to hear from one of Clinton's anti-war challengers, labor activist Jonathan Tessini. He got a very warm welcome. He said, "I entered this race because I refused to be silent about the immorality of the war in Iraq." He's a former president of the National Writers Union. It was one of the many lines in a short speech that drew applause from the rural Democrats. There were also cheers when he called for President Bush and Vice President Cheney as leaders of the party of evil, to be impeached. And more applause after he declared, "Bring the troops home now." There was no applause, however, when he told the delegates that the people who support the war and voted for the war must be held accountable. Clinton voted for the war. She has been highly critical of Bush's handling of it, but despite that criticism, she has agreed with the president that it would be a mistake to set a timetable for troop withdrawal. I would like to put out a call to Senator Clinton of New York. And what I'd like to say to Senator Clinton of New York and to all of the citizens of New York, if you don't get serious about pulling troops out of Iraq, you're either for it or against it. You're either for the war or you're against the war. Now, where do you reside? You're either for violence and for taking the illegal occupation of a nation, or you're against it. It's pretty simple. I think she's made her decision. I certainly hope that the people of the state of New York make theirs as well and side with a candidate that is about peace and justice and not necessarily about creating more war. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Bruce Birch. This is All Things. We will be right back.
Hi, this is Guy James. Remember me? As many of you know, I got the boot from the radio stations that carried my show a while back because I got a little too controversial for them to handle. Well, I'm back now, but I'll be doing my show 5 days a week from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time starting on March 20th. You can join us at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org. And if you like hard-hitting, thought-provoking, entertaining radio, then join us starting March 20th at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org for the new Guy James Show.
Hey, listen, tell me something, John. Do you guys eat a lot of mangoes down there?
Not enough to base a foreign policy on.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. We don't eat that many of them here either.
The United States is India's largest trading partner, and India is one of the United States' fastest growing export markets. And oh, by the way, Mr. Prime Minister, the United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
That's right. It's March Mango Madness. Nukes for mangoes, mangoes for nukes. Join Bruce and I, John Fox, this weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. Catch us at fourthestateradio.com or headonradionetwork.com.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff. 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're back with Bruce Birch on All Things, and that's that bumper music is it's our pal. Of course, he's deceased at this point, but the wonderful musician, Mr. Frank Zappa. Before we went to the break, I issued a challenge to Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. I wonder if she'll take me up on it. No, I did issue a challenge, and the challenge is, you know. You're either, I mean, you know, let's look at this very clearly. I mean, you know, everybody wants to talk about politics in terms of the gray area, but let's look at this in a very clear, direct. Let's put some light on it, huh? Let's turn on the 4,000 watt bulb for a moment, and really look at the deal here, okay? And the deal is, you know, that we have leaders in power right now in the seat of government in Washington D.C. that are hedging their bets, you know. They're hoping that by not you know, jumping around and opposing the president too vocally, that they won't upset the conservative leaning members of their party. And you know, I got to tell you something. If it quacks like a duck and walks like a duck, and has feathers like a duck and sounds like Daffy Duck. Maybe the damn thing's a duck. Okay? So when they come, these guys, these people who are running for office, when they come back to your neighborhoods and they sit there and they tell you, oh, yes, we're going to work hard to remove the troops from Iraq and we're going to work hard to do this, and it's just not that simple. Well, you know what? Yeah, it is that simple. Dare I even go one further step and say the word reparations for Iraq? That country has devolved, has sunk into civil war, and the leaders of Iraq are calling it civil war. Why in the hell can't we call it civil war? And why in the hell don't we have people running for office who are saying, we need to get our asses out of Iraq and get out of there now? It is that simple. And when I say that, what I mean by that is that you're either for torture or you're against it. I'm for torture as long as there's some chocolate chips. I mean, come on. Really, let's look at this for a moment. You're either for torture or you're against it. You're either for rendition or you're against it. What sort of moral high ground can we stand on and tell people around the world, which we did recently, that they have egregious human rights violations when we ourselves operate secret prisons in countries such as Romania and Morocco and kidnap people and send them to these prisons and say to them, you don't have any rights because we think you're a terrorist. And so therefore, the minute we thought that, your rights went away. You're either for torture or you're against it. And what's happening in Iraq right now is a perfect example of a schizophrenic foreign policy that we have in this country. And when I say schizophrenic, I mean we'll go out, and, you know, these politicians of ours, they'll get out in front of the television cameras and they'll stand up there in front of us and they'll tell us, well, you know, we're trying to spread freedom and democracy. Freedom's on the march. Well, every time I hear that phrase, I'm thinking of goose stepping with these high boots. These politicians will get up there and they'll stand up there and they'll tell us this stuff, and then they'll turn around and they'll vote for stuff, for funding things such as concentration camps. You know, so yeah, guys, you know, everyone who's listening to this program tonight, seriously look at what people are trying to feed you, because the bottom line is that you and I have a choice come November. We have a choice to vote for people. You know, it's not about the lesser of two evils, but it is about saying to them, you know what, we expect you to act a certain way when you get into office. And we need a radical change. I'm sorry, but we do need a radical change in our war policy. We absolutely need a radical change. If we don't get a radical change, guess what's going to happen? Our country is going to sink further and further and further into a morass where we may never recover. Last night we had a telephone call on Fourth Estate Radio, my friend Peter, who said that he was scared that we may never recover from this, that our public image worldwide may never recover, and he may very well be right. But we have to give it a try, and we have to give it a really, you know what, that means that citizens need to run for office. Not career politicians, not the sons and daughters of politicians, but you and I, ladies and gentlemen, with the common sense, need to step out and give ourselves, you know, the enough fortitude to say, I think I can do a better job than some of these yahoos up there. And I'm hearing a cue, so we'll be right back. My name's Bruce Birch. This is All Things.
In a grave caused by jealousy. Here lies love. In a grave caused by jealousy.
Bush and Rumsfeld have got themselves in a bind of their own making. As much as they deny that Iraq's on the brink of, or already in the abyss of civil war, their wishing doesn't make it so. Rumsfeld's testimony to Congress last week sure wasn't reassuring. He said we have to rely on Iraqi security forces to quell any civil war to the extent they're able to. Hey, but that's the rub. They're not able to.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Bush and Rumsfeld have got themselves in a bind of their own making. As much as they deny that Iraq's on the brink of, or already in the abyss of civil war, their wishing doesn't make it so. Rumsfeld's testimony to Congress last week sure wasn't reassuring. He said we'd have to rely on Iraqi security forces to quell any civil war to the extent they're able to. Hey, but that's the rub. They're not able to, as they've demonstrated time and time again. So as civil war breaks out, the 130,000 U.S. troops there are stuck. Either they'll remain in their barracks and the civil war will rage on, ruining Bush's hopes for total victory and a symbol to the world of some peaceful democratic Iraq, or they'll be ordered out of their barracks to referee or take sides in the civil war, in which case U.S. casualties, already over 2,300, will rise dramatically. Neither choice is palatable. Bush has gotten our troops into a lose-lose situation, but the worst of the bad options is to keep the troops there and to have them patrol the civil war. Even U.S. Ambassador to Iraq Zalmay Khalilzad has admitted that Bush's war has opened up a Pandora's box of ethnic and sectarian tensions. Our troops can't put the lid back on that box, so let's get them out of there before 2,300 U.S. deaths becomes 2,400.
You're back with Bruce Birch on all things, and this is we're going into our bottom of the hour there. I do have on as a guest tonight, and I'm going to preface this a little bit. This is a lady, you know, I talked about before we went to the break. I talked about the fact that we need to have citizen candidates. Well, guess what? I have a citizen candidate here that I wanted to talk with tonight that I wanted to share with you guys. And her name is Cindy Holmes, and she is running for Congress in the 5th District of North Carolina, which is the far northwestern end of North Carolina. Cindy, how are you doing tonight?
Fine, Bruce, and how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Tell us about your campaign a little bit, Cindy, if you would.
Well, it started the night of the last election when everybody was crying. I got mad. And said that I would run instead. I waited for a while to see if anybody was going to come forward who would have a lot more experience than I, and nobody had. So I went ahead and filed, although I had been working over the past year of starting to build a base, and decided that we would do it as a citizen candidacy because this country was really founded on citizen participation. We're always proud of our citizen soldiers. Absolutely. And we wonder what's going wrong in Congress, and probably it's because they're politicians that intend on spending their lifetime there until they retire. And if you look at Congress now, it's been in gridlock for so long because everybody has been there for way too long and nothing's really expected of them. They know they're going to get reelected. So we need to really go back to citizen candidates, or need to go to, because we've never really had them, and have people just limit themselves to terms and make a path for someone who comes after you that's got better or fresher ideas and can move the government and the people's agenda forward a lot better. And I really think that average citizens understand the problems of this country a lot better because we're living with it and dealing with it every day, and people on the other side of the beltway are so insulated and generally are so wealthy that their wealth and the distance isolates them from real life and the situations that are occurring in our country.
Cindy, some of the ideas that you have as a citizen candidate, let's talk about the war. You know, one of the things that I don't know if you were listening prior to calling in, but one of the stories that I've been talking about, or one of the things that I was talking about before in the first part of this hour, was about the war in Iraq and, you know, just how insane it is at this point that we're still there and the president is still talking about trying to win a war that he claimed victory for in May of 2003. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, the president lives in, I'm not sure which, but some alternative universe where he sees things in a completely different way than reality has them. Second of all, he's very proud of his daughters being the same age as Jessica Lynch, the West Virginia soldier who was over there fighting and was captured, and we know the story. But the difference is that Jessica went there and fought, and his daughters are not there. And neither are 99.9% of the congressmen and congresswomen who are serving. Their children aren't there. And none of our senators have anyone who is fighting. So they have really different perceptions of the war than we do. I don't know. Today I was watching TV and the president jumped out of the airplane and was going to a press conference. And he was talking about it being the third anniversary of the liberation of Iraq. Well, we didn't go there to liberate. We went there for weapons of mass destruction. And exactly. Liberation was a spin that took place much later. And it's just so insane that he continues to talk about the liberation of a country and that we've completely destroyed. As of today, I believe it is 2,313 American soldiers have been killed. And 17,124 have been injured. Now, this doesn't count all those who come back or are injured off the battlefield, those who come back and have psychological problems, those who commit suicide are not considered among the dead. So we've got a much larger figure than those. I was talking to someone a couple weeks ago, and they told me that it's projected it'll cost over $1 trillion to take care of the injured over their lifetimes. We don't have that kind of money left in our budget.
Right.
This war is costing this country way too much and is seeing absolutely no returns of any stable government in the country, let alone a stable democracy. And so people are not seeing, in a cost ratio benefit, anything positive there. But in terms of sheer humanity, besides the over 2,000 who are dead, and the effect that it's had on their the devastating effect it's had on their families and their friends and on people who knew them. We're talking an insurgency that is killing 40 Iraqi civilians a day now. That's insane. We're talking about probably over 100,000 people, civilians, who have been killed since the beginning of this war. Now, Saddam Hussein may have been a really awful dictator, but I don't think he approached those figures on killing that we have been able to do with this war to the civilian population. The whole thing is crazy. The idea of the doctrine of preemptive war is just totally insane, because if you take the premise that you don't like a government, so you go in there to remove it and you bomb the people, you destroy the infrastructure, well, once you open that Pandora's box and say it's okay for us to do, well, other countries can do the same thing to us. And a lot of people don't like George Bush, and I don't think Americans would appreciate bombs raining down on their country to wake up to someday and seeing our infrastructure destroyed because somebody, one man, didn't like another man.
Sure. What do you think about, Cindy, what do you think about the situation that's heating up with Iran?
I think it's a repeat.
You think it's a repeat?
I think it's a complete deja vu. All of the rhetoric we're hearing. And again, I go back to precedence, though. Well, there's one thing even before precedence, is that our country has sold a lot of technology to Iran in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Halliburton has... all through this war has still been doing business with Iran through an offshore company office that they have in the Cayman Islands that frees them from the laws about dealing with enemies of the state. And because it's a foreign-based country that Halliburton is, well, a foreign-based office, that frees Halliburton from our laws to go over and sell to Iran.
They're based in Bermuda, isn't that right? Or
Cayman Islands. They have office, not an office there, but a post office box drop. And that is enough to qualify them for the status of office.
Sure.
So that they can circumvent American laws on trading with people that are classified as enemies of America. I also find it very two-faced to tell Iran that they can't have nuclear weapons when Israel has, at last count, I believe, when I heard, I can't remember his name, the scientist that was jailed, Mordecai something or other. He was recently on Link TV and was talking about the fact that he had worked for the Israeli military branch that did the nuclear weapons, and they had over 200 bombs available to them. So, and we're allowing that. We're not requiring that Israel become a signatory to any nuclear weapons treaties, but now we're demanding that Iran not be able to protect itself against attack by Israel and not even allow them to make nuclear energy for domestic use. I find that very hypocritical, and in light, especially in light of the fact that we also just went to India and said it was okay to circumvent all nuclear treaties and the IEA and everything else. And
well, I found it kind of interesting in all the research and some of the radio programs that I've done that Iran actually had reached out a number of times to the State Department to negotiate over the nuclear situation over the last 2 years, and every time was rebuffed.
Well, this is a government. You have to understand that if they don't like you, they're not going to talk to you. I mean, we have a president who can't even talk to his own citizens, who has to go, and if he's going to have a town meeting, he has to have everyone pre-interviewed and pre-ticketed before you can see him. This is a, so it just translates to a higher form that he won't talk to Korea. And so it makes perfect sense that he would refuse to talk to Iran also. And if you're the leader, the main leader of the world and the leader of, quote, the free world, and you cannot speak to people you have differences with, then there's a real problem in your leadership style.
Well,
especially for someone who can't even talk to their own citizens, who's supposed to be governing.
I totally agree. I mean, you know, listen, he's painful to listen to. I mean, there's no doubt that he's painful to listen to. What are your thoughts on some of the economic stuff that's going on around around the country at this point? You know, I've read that housing construction is up, but that buying is down, and you know, there's been some mixed signals about the economy. You know, I know that, you know, you're running for office in a district where Virginia Fox is, and Virginia Fox has basically voted 99.9% in favor of everything the president says.
Mm-hmm.
How would you, if you were to, what are your thoughts about, you know, how would you challenge her in regards to some of those economic situations?
I think the 5th District is a gold mine of opportunity that hasn't even been taken advantage of yet in the least. We have the wine region here. I'm talking with some businessmen now and putting a venture together where we'll develop it, the whole Yadkin Valley area, including Winston-Salem, into what I call the Napa Valley of the East. Mm-hmm. And I think that will generate a lot of business in terms of tourism, in terms of industries that and shops that can sell items that revolve around the wine industry.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of opportunity for putting a college here that would do nothing but teach winemaking,
sure,
and wine research. I think there's tremendous opportunity for that. I also look at the fact that the 5th District is very rural. We have a lot of farms still left. Farmers aren't doing too well. But if we use alternative energy, say biomass, biodiesel, we can put the farmers back to work. They can begin to grow the fuel that we need for biomass, biodiesel, and we can build the processing plants right here, which will generate a lot of industry in terms of construction and then of the processing of the biomasses, and then the corresponding maintenance of the plant and office staff that it will take. It'll generate advertising. It'll generate distributorships. Those two things, I think, are really exciting. Plus, I'm really looking into talking to some people about bringing some new charter schools to the area so that our kids in the rural areas can get a higher quality of education that will prepare them for computer technical fields or more for international business in terms of language and culture. So I'm really excited about those two. And I think if you really raise the quality of education throughout the 5th, you're going to attract a lot of people to the area, especially businessmen, who like to relocate to where there's good educational systems. There's a lot of exciting things going on, and I think we can create a real solid economy here and quite a bit of buzz that will bring more business here.
Absolutely. Listen, we need to take a quick break, Cindy, but if you'll hang on with us, we'll be right back. You're listening to Bruce Birch, and this is All Things, and we'll be right back.
Fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
All right, you're back on All Things with Bruce Birch. On tonight with me is a guest who is running, is a citizen candidate and running for office in the North Carolina, the 5th Congressional District, and her name is Cindy Holmes. And you can, Cindy, I believe what's your website address?
www.cindyholmes.com, and that's S-Y-N-D-I-H-O-L-M-E-S, all one word.
cindyholmes.com. Cindy, you know, I know we had talked a little bit about Iraq before we went to the break, but I wanted to, you know, hear directly from you. I mean, what is your? I mean, everyone sort of seems to have their own sort of idea of how to get out of Iraq. What is your idea on that?
The first thing I want to do is call a truce. We need to stop the killing. Everybody needs, the civilians over there, the citizens need a break. We need to sit down with whoever. And again, that's been a huge problem, is because this government doesn't like to negotiate with a lot of people. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to. We need to sit down, call the truce, just ask everybody to abide by it. bring all the people who have to be brought to the table and decide what needs to be done. And then we need to involve some Arabic countries who understand the culture, who understand the history, who understand the religious perspectives, and get them to come on board to be the shepherds of bringing Iraq to a stable situation. Now, I don't believe it's going to be a democracy, at least not in the sense that we want it to be. However, my biggest concern is that this really isn't a goal of this government to stabilize this, the current government, because when they first instituted a government in Iraq, it was handpicked by the Americans. Okay. And Mr. Alawi had been a CIA operative. He was very malleable to the administration and the oil company's needs. Now that the people have actually elected a government that they want, it's a government that's not necessarily being able to be controlled by Washington, D.C. So my concern is that, or the oil companies. So actually promoting a civil war makes a lot more sense, because if the country divides, the oil is in the north and in the south. We already control the north with the Kurds, and I'm sure we can cut a deal with the Shia, or the oil companies can, to control the oil in the south. And that leaves the Sunnis in the middle with nothing. But they're a minority. They have nothing to bring to the table in terms of oil. So according to the oil companies, they wouldn't matter. So I'm really looking, I'm very worried that the agenda may be that it's better to have this country divided as far as corporate interests are involved, than to try and work and bring about a stable Iraq.
Okay. Cindy, is there, you know, we're getting up close to the top of the hour. Give us your, you know, a quick 2-minute talk on what, you know, you believe your candidacy to be about and why people should vote for you.
I'm a peace and justice candidate in that, well, I want this war to be finished, and we just discussed that. I want accountability by the people who took us to war, and that just doesn't include the administration. It also includes bringing Congress to task for why they abdicated their responsibility in calling for a war legally under the Constitution, and why they have continued to fund an illegal war. I don't believe that we are ever going to have any security in this country as long as we continue to make enemies at the rate we're making them in the world. We are making so many enemies that we don't have enough guns to kill them all. We don't have enough prisons in which to imprison them all. So we're really left with two solutions. One is just to kill them all and really use bombs that we'd rather not talk about. Or the other is to sit down, to rejoin humanity at the table and work out our differences and come to a peaceful solution. And I think that's our only hope for maintaining our security in a very insecure world at the moment. And it's been made insecure by this government. They, not only have they started two wars, but as we discussed previously, they're threatening Iran. They threaten Venezuela. They threaten Cuba. They threaten Korea. And so I really think that security through peace and negotiations is the only way that we're going to find true security in the end.
Okay.
I also am really wanting to have an energy, alternative energy process, because I think that the only way we're going to, again, have security is by getting away from our dependence on oil, because we really can't speak truth to the governments that are very repressive, that, like Saudi Arabia, that we should be able to on human rights for Nigeria because we're so dependent on that oil.
Sure.
And we can't compete with, we can't continue to compete against China and India that are growing economies. They're over billions of people each, when we've only got less than 300 million people in our country and say that we need more oil than you do on a fairness base. So we need to move away from that. And building a new economy on alternative energy, I think, will bring tons of viable jobs to back to America, and that will keep them here. On a local level, I think we've got a really exciting economic package that we can go forward with and really build the 5th District into a vibrant economy. And I think we can avoid some of the pitfalls that we have seen happen in other growing communities of having affordable housing and secure the county so that there are areas that their children, that when children move, go away to college or wherever they go, and they want to come home and raise a family, they'll be able to come back and have a good job and good education for their children, and it'll be a place where they can come back to and live out their lives, which right now in most of this district you can't do. Your children move away because they have to find a job somewhere.
Sure. Cindy, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome, Bruce.
Again, that's Cindy Holmes, running for 5th District in North Carolina. CindyHolmes.com, CindyHolmes.com. Thanks so much, Cindy. And we'll be right back. This is Bruce Virtue on All Things.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Planet Jack. He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told him that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fats, and flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. 3 years ago, the United States began its illegal invasion of Iraq. Those of us who knew something about history knew exactly what would happen. The Iraqi army, rather than facing a fight they knew they couldn't win, simply melted away into the population and waited and planned. Even then, we could have still won the peace in Iraq if we had put an organized effort into making the lives of ordinary Iraqis better. and there were people, including some U.S. soldiers, who tried in small ways to do just that. But the leaders who brought us into the war, the cowards of the right-wing propaganda machine who waved the flag in our faces whenever someone objected, and the assorted, misinformed, and easily manipulated drones that put them into office in the first place, were too busy demanding apologies from the war's critics and screaming mission accomplished to act on what was going on. Now, since we've apparently run out of other ideas, we've just decided to drop more bombs on them and try to sucker us into going to war with Iran. It would be easy to just demand an apology from them, but in the wake of all this death and torture, that's no longer enough. If they had any sense of decency or honor, they would, at the very least, resign from their positions and let someone else try to clean up the mess they made. But we all know that's not going to happen. Decency and honor are for wimps, after all. The only question for me is how far they'll go to keep themselves in power and out of prison. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Hi, this is Guy James. Remember me? As many of you know, I got the boot from the radio stations that carried my show a while back because I got a little too controversial for them to handle. Well, I'm back now, but I'll be doing my show 5 days a week from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time starting on March 20th. You can join us at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org. And if you like hard-hitting, thought-provoking, entertaining radio, then join us starting March 20th at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org for the new Guy James Show.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Bruce Birch on all things. And glad to have you back with me, top of the second hour of our program. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and that would be 11 on the East Coast. Eight on the left coast, and who knows what time it is in Australia. Maybe my friend John will pop up and let us know. If you'd like to join us, we are chatting in the Tom Hartman chat room. You can get there by going to THOM Hartman with two N's.com. Click on live chat, and it'll shoot you right into the chat room where there are who knows how many people. Maybe about 20 people, 15 to 20 people in there tonight talking about various different progressive things. And actually, they were talking about racing a little while ago, so you never know what the topic's going to be there, my friends. You never know. We just had on the line with us, we had Cindy Holmes, who is a citizen candidate, a peace and justice candidate, how she describes herself, from Moxville, North Carolina. And she is running for Congress in the 5th District, which is currently, the seat is currently being held by Virginia Fox,
who is a Republican. That district includes Winston-Salem, North Carolina, North Wilkesboro, and that's pretty. I think those are pretty much the largest Mount Airy cities there. So yeah, you know, go on over to her website. Go on over to her website, CindyHolmes.com, with SYNDIHolmes.com. Spin the hit counters for her. Let her know that you that you're checking her out. All right, we start just a quick recap on the show. We started off talking to Gene from Oregon, and Gene was talking about the march out there that turned out about 30,000 people, according to him, and according to Portland.IndyMedia.org. Huge turnout for an anti-war march out there. There were 457 events nationwide yesterday. There are a few today. I would say that the American left is alive and well, and made their presence known yesterday by marching in cities all across the nation. They were joined in solidarity by nations around the world. There were marches in every major city around the world yesterday, all against the illegal occupation of the nation of Iraq. Now, if you want to get in on the program, I do recommend strongly that you do that. We'd love to hear from you. You can dial in at 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. Bob at the Head On Radio Network Studios will pick up your call and get you right in on the program. I wanted to read this. I found this editorial today, and I got to tell you, it really made a lot of sense to me. And I wanted to read this because I think this is part of the problem that we've got going on. This is written by Greg Mitchell over at editorandpublisher.com. The title is "On Third Anniversary: Editorials Dither While Iraq Burns." Anyone who hoped that this landmark would inspire the country's leading newspapers to finally editorialize for a radical change in war policy has to be disappointed again. "Calling for urgent diplomacy is about as strong as the proposals get," by Greg Mitchell. From this evidence, let's see, anyone who hoped that the third anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq would inspire the country's leading newspapers to finally editorialize for a radical change in the White House's war policy has to be disappointed again. From this evidence, the editorial boards of the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, the Knight Ridder Collective, and others appear to be as clueless about what to do as are Mr. Bush and Mr. Rumsfeld. Reading the editorials, which mainly call for more of the same, puts you into a time warp. There could have been, perhaps were, written 1 year ago, maybe two. There's always a turning point to count on. From the transfer of power to the coming, "This time we mean it, we are really forming a unity government." Reviving a Vietnam-era phrase, always dangerous nowadays. It is the nation's editorial voice that is the pitiful, helpless giant, even as the American and Iraqi public alike call for the start of a withdrawal. On the other hand, the same newspapers and many others produced for the third anniversary on Sunday tough-minded and vital war coverage likely to make any thinking reader cry out in the direction of Washington, "Enough!" But that's nothing new. Reporters from most papers long ago revealed that the U.S. presence in Iraq is doing some good, but more harm. And then the editorial side proclaims, "Let's stick around for more." As with their news coverage, the editorials are often harshly critical of the war and the administration. They inevitably say the right things. Yet after all that, they claim, despite no real evidence that things will only get worse if we start even a very slow pullout, or gosh, after three years with no end in sight, set some kind of timetable for the same. You know, And I could go on and read this and read this and read this. But basically, what Greg Mitchell is pointing out is what all of us know. And that is that the U.S. media is complicit in every facet of this war. We are told what to think. We are told how to think. We are told when to say it, what to say. And yet, even when our politicians, such as Chuck Hagel, say, and this mindless banter about, well, if we leave, the whole place falls apart, we can't leave, we can't even think about leaving, wait a minute, you just showed on your screen the cost to the American people of the last 3 years. It's helping bankrupt the country, by the way. We didn't think about any of that, and it's not just the high cost of lives and the continuation of that, but our standing in the world. Chuck Hagel, who is a Republican, can say that, but the newspapers can't? Okay, well, there is that, ladies and gentlemen. There is that. And you know something I got to tell you? I know I'm focusing a lot on Iraq today, but I guess it just blows my mind, you know? It just blows my mind. You know, I was reading a story earlier, if I can find it real quick. I know we're going to go to a break here very shortly, but I was reading a story about whether or not, you know, this is a civil war or not. And the president comes out and says some stupid stuff, which we'll hear after the break. But, you know, the Bush administration says Iraq is not in a civil war. But I got to tell you, these guys have told us, they've told us time and time again stuff that makes absolutely no sense at all whatsoever. And then the stuff that they do say, you know, it's like complete opposite world, and it makes no sense. I know you and I, you know, I could say this until the cows come home. But the reality is what are we going to do about it? You know, my view is we got to do a couple of things. But the first thing we need to do is elect these citizen candidates who can go to Washington and turn this thing around. You know, who have some moxie, who have for lack of a better term, philosophical cojones, who can go into D.C. and can say to those folks up there, guess what? The people down in the people where I'm from really don't care whether or not you look or act or talk like a Republican. They say you're a Democrat, and they want you to start acting like one. Strong words, I'm sure. If you'd like to get in on the program, we'd love for you to do so. You can also email me if you want to do that. You can email me allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org, and I'll check it during the break. But you can also call in if you'd like to call in. By doing so, you can do that by calling 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. Alternatively, we are also blogging at headonradionetwork.com. There's a show post up there, and if you want to check that out, you can do that. And so we'll be right back. My name is Bruce Birch. You are listening to All Things, and we will be right back. listen, tell me something, John. Do you guys eat a lot of mangoes down there?
Not enough to base a foreign policy on.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. We don't eat that many of them here either.
The United States is India's largest trading partner, and India is one of the United States' fastest growing export markets. And oh, by the way, Mr. Prime Minister, the United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
That's right. It's March Mango Madness. Nukes for mangoes, mangoes for nukes. Join Bruce and I, John Fox, this weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. Catch us at fourthestateradio.com or headonradionetwork.com.
I've got this time on my hands. You are the one to walk through. Yes, I'm.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism, and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
How can we help prepare our kids for the future? Hi, this is Roger McGuinn. These days, our children face challenges unimaginable to us only a generation ago. We adults need to help our kids find something in school that really sparks their interest and keeps them involved. If that something happens to be music, the child will benefit in so many ways. Playing music in school is a great way to make friends. Studies are showing that kids involved in music are less likely to get into trouble. And kids who studied music find science and math easier to grasp. They tend to score higher on SATs. It has something to do with something called spatial IQ. So get your kids involved with school music. It's a great way to help prepare them for life.
A PSA brought to you by NEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
You're back on Bruce Birch. This is All Things. All Things with Bruce Birch. Thank you, Bob. My wonderful friend Bob in West Virginia is doing a fantastic job. We are trying our doggone damnedest to get this little radio network off the ground, and I think we're doing it. I mean, as a matter of fact, no, I know we're doing it. And so if you're listening, thank you for listening and, you know, for being a part of our grand experiment in trying to bring democracy back to the United States of America. Apparently, the president today gave a speech. And, Bob, if you want to go ahead and run that little short clip, I would really appreciate it.
Bourdain is back.
I encourage the Iraqi leaders to continue to work hard to get this government up and running. The Iraqi people voted for democracy last December. About 75% of the eligible citizens went to the polls to vote. And now the Iraqi leaders are working together to enact a government that reflects the will of the people. And so I'm encouraged by the progress. The ambassador was encouraged by it. Today, as well, marks the third anniversary of the beginning of the liberation of Iraq. And it's a time to reflect. And this morning, my reflections were upon the sacrifices of the men and women who wear our uniform. Ours is an amazing nation where thousands have volunteered to serve our country. They volunteered to, many volunteered after 9/11, knowing full well that their time in the military could put them in harm's way. And so on this third anniversary, the beginning of the liberation of Iraq, I think all Americans should offer thanks to the men and women who wear the uniform and their families who support them. We are implementing a strategy that will lead to victory in Iraq. And a victory in Iraq will make this country more secure and will help lay the foundation of peace for generations to come. May God continue to bless our troops in harm's way. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. No, thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. President, for mucking up the entire foreign policy of the United States of America for years and years and years to come. Oh, my God. All right. You know something? We're implementing a strategy to... Okay, wait a minute. Was it just me, or was it about 3 years ago? I'm sorry, not 3 years ago. 34 months ago that he said, major combat operations in Iraq are over, and declared victory. Did he just say that we haven't won yet? I'm trying to figure this out, because something's not quite right here. I can read you the quote. He says, we're implementing a strategy that will lead to victory in Iraq. And a victory in Iraq will make this country more secure and will help lay the foundation of peace for generations to come. Okay. Now, understanding that this man lives an opposite world, let's really look at the actual statement that he just made. I'm thinking the actual statement is going to be more something like, we are implementing a strategy that will lead to a loss in Iraq, and a loss in Iraq will make this country less secure and will help destroy the foundation of peace for generations to come. Because, as we all know, he's done such a darn good job of doing that so far, right? He's done such a darn good job of implementing strategies that will lead to victory in Iraq. He's done such a darn good job of helping to make this country more secure and to help lay the foundation of peace for generations to come. This buffoon wouldn't know peace if it bit him in the ass. All right, now I know I'm getting a little bit out there at this point, but let me just say this, because I don't want to stay on this on Iraq and this president for the entire evening. But I do want to say, you know, that we have at this program tried our best to keep the level of discourse above name-calling. But I got to tell you, at this point, you know, we're on the three-year anniversary. We 2,317 soldiers have lost their lives as a result of his action, of his illegal occupation. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis have lost their lives as a result of this. Now, I ask you, what kind of choice do we have except for to try to create an atmosphere where everything that this man does, everything that he says, is refuted directly? What other choice do we have? I don't think we have any other choice, because you're either, again, for torture or you're against it. And if you're against it, then you need to be against it wholeheartedly. There are no half measures when it comes to this stuff. Food for thought on this Sunday evening. You are listening to All Things with Bruce Birch. We'll be right back after the bottom of the hour. It's 27 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back.
Helen Hayes. Speaking of Helen, well, it's getting near dark. When the lights be closing, your tired little eyes. With you, my dove, and give you that potato-headed surprise.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer, too. And when we do, it can be very hard for us to talk about it and get support, because nobody expects a man to have breast cancer. But I know one place to get reliable, timely information about breast cancer. Breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet that translates all those big medical words your doctor uses into plain English. It helps you understand what kind of cancer you have and what treatments are out there. It helps you get your head together and make a list of questions for your next doctor's visit. And it gives you all kinds of other good information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. One disturbing aspect of the Dubai port controversy is the extent to which it was fueled by anti-Arab sentiment here at home. I know Bush used this as a defense for a crony deal, but as much as I can't stand Bush, I do worry about the rise of xenophobia. A recent poll shows that 25% of Americans admit to being prejudiced against Muslims and Arabs, with 33% saying that Islam is a religion that incites violence, and 43% saying they'd recently heard anti-Arab comments. Bush himself is to blame for much of this. First of all, his whole administration has peddled fear of the Arab world, and he tried to tell Americans that Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were essentially one and the same person. Secondly, he can't even distinguish between Muslims and Arabs. Not all Arabs are Muslims, and the majority of Muslims aren't Arab. For instance, Pakistan and Indonesia are Muslim countries, but not Arabic ones. But when Bush was in Pakistan, he embarrassingly praised Musharraf as being a force for freedom and moderation in the Arab world. But not all the blame can be laid at Bush's feet. Others own part of it, including right-wing talk radio hosts and even comedians who make cheap ethnic jokes. Plus, there's a long and polluted river of nativism that runs right through this country. When we drink from it, we get sick, and it's highly contagious. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Warren Zevon there. You're back with me. All things with Bruce Lee.
I was gambling in Havana.
I took a little risk. Okay, thank you so much, Bob. I love that tune. I love Zevon. That kind of helps me get my head back together a little bit, too. There was just as an aside, VH1 Saturday played a documentary of Warren Zevon, and they basically followed him around with cameras for the last, the last 2 or 3 months of his life, and got a firsthand picture, if you will, of what it was like for him, having lung cancer, and it was pretty interesting, pretty interesting. I've always really appreciated Warren Zevon and his look on politics and his look on the world through his music, and sort of helps boost me when I'm not feeling so good. But we were talking a little bit earlier, a few minutes ago, about it, and I want to get away from Iraq at this point, because I really, even though we have such an insane situation, I just want to step away from it for a minute, and I want to start talking about it. And I'd love to hear from you, actually. Maybe you attended an anti-war rally this weekend, or maybe you didn't and wanted to. Maybe your friend did and brought you back some pictures and a T-shirt. I'd love to hear about it. Please give me a call if you want to. We'd love to hear from you. 1-877-443-2366. This is Conversation Radio. you know, if you want a good talking to, you can get that from Rush Limbaugh. Here we like to have a good conversation with you. So do give us a ring if you're interested in doing that. Also, you can give us a, send an email, allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. An interesting story that popped up on Raw Story late this afternoon. And, again, this goes back to what's going on with the president and his staff. In a late-night Friday filing, attorneys for Vice President Dick Cheney's former chief of staff, I. Lewis Scooter Libby, named key witnesses in the outing of the CIA operative Valerie Plame. Included for the first time in formal documents was National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley. In the documents, Libby's team listed former Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage, former Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Mark Grossman, current National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley, and former CIA spokesman Bill Harlow, all as potential witnesses for the defense. Plame's status as a CIA operative became known to the public when her identity was disclosed by conservative columnist Robert Novak in a July 14, 2003 column. The piece ran just 1 week after her husband, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson, had written an op-ed for the New York Times asserting that the White House officials twisted pre-war intelligence on Iraq. Libby is currently indicted on 5 counts of perjury and false statements and is hoping to demonstrate that he was not the first government official to leak Plame. To leak Plame Wilson's name to reporters by revealing the sources of journalist Bob Woodward. While there's been much speculation that the new anti-deep throat may be Richard Armitage, Raw Story, this is off of the Raw Story, so go check it out. Raw Story confirmed late last year, according to attorneys close to the investigation, Woodward's source was actually Stephen Hadley, who at the time of the Plame Wilson outing was serving as Deputy National Security Advisor under Condoleezza Rice, and he is now the National Security Advisor. So, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. The plot thickens. It'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. I don't think we're going to see a trial anytime soon, but, you know, every so often there's a little tidbit. And of course, they made this filing late night Friday so that it would come out in the newspaper on Saturday, which is the least read newspaper of the week. You know, we also saw this week very interesting, let's do this. While we're talking about Hadley, let's talk about Hadley. Because apparently he made some statements this week that we probably, you know, here we go, we're going right back to the Middle East. I didn't want to do this, but we're doing it anyway. Bush's top foreign policy advisor, who is Stephen Hadley, said Friday that Iran's new willingness to talk about Iraq with the United States is probably a ploy designed to divert pressure and divert attention from international concern that Tehran wants a nuclear bomb. The United States has accused Iran of using a civilian nuclear program as a cover to build atomic weapons, an allegation that Tehran denies. The UN Security Council is expected to discuss Iran's nuclear program this month with Washington pressing for penalties. Stephen Hadley says, what is interesting is that the Iranians would choose now, at this moment, in such a very public way, to embrace this idea and to try to expand it to a negotiation about a broader set of issues. The concern, therefore, is that it is simply a device by the Iranians to try and divert pressure that they're feeling in New York to try and drive a wedge between the United States and the other countries with which we are working on the nuclear issue, and, if you will, divert pressure and divert attention. Hadley added, obviously this is something that we and those who are working with us on these issues will not let happen. Okay, who is our ambassador to the United Nations again? Oh, that's right. Yosemite Sam John Bolton. And, you know, there's a now, you know what? There's a guy who's got a heck of a mustache. Oh, my goodness. But you know what? There's a guy that I wouldn't send to negotiate. I wouldn't send him to negotiate punishment with my child. Okay? This is, oh, my goodness. So there's Hadley back in the news. I think, you know what? Here's a thought. Maybe Hadley coming out in the public eye like that, maybe that's his defense trying to divert attention from the fact that he was named on a list of witnesses in the Libby trial. You know, so maybe there's a little bit more than just diverting on Iran's side. Maybe Mr. Dude there is doing the same thing. And now here's the story from the cockamamie idea of the week. I don't have music for that yet, but maybe I can make some sort of sound effect. Ooga, there. Cockamamie idea of the week. The White House, along with saying that Iran is diverting attention from whatever, also wants to see more drug testing, random drug testing, to be initiated on student athletes, musicians, and others who participate in after-school activities. White House officials say drug testing is an effective way to keep students away from harmful substances like marijuana and crystal methamphetamine, and have held seminars across the country to promote the practice to local school officials. Okay. Now, let's look at this for a moment. We have in our schools, we have guidance counselors, we have people who are trained and who know the minds of kids. And so, we have school psychologists. We have all these people in schools who are trained to deal with our children. Why does something like this need to be promoted to them? If it were such a darn good program, you would think they would already know about it and would be willing to implement it. But perhaps it's not a darn good program. Some parents, educators, and school officials call it a heavy-handed, ineffective way to discourage drug use that undermines trust and invades students' privacy. Well, the last thing there is what, you know, affects me more than anything else. Jennifer Kern, who is a research associate at the Drug Policy Alliance, a nonprofit group that has frequently criticized U.S. drug policy, says, "Our money should be going toward educating young people, not putting them under these surveillance programs." And that's what it is. Yet one more surveillance tool. I'm speechless again. I want to look back. I want to, you know, just for a second, I wish I had some memory music. I want to look back to the Reagan years, and I think I remember when I was in high school hearing about this very exact same thing where they were going to talk about, they were going to start randomly drug testing students. Well, you know, here's something that I want to say about that, because I am a parent. And I got to tell you, I have a tough time with anyone who is going to be testing my son or daughter for anything without my permission. And if they're saying, well, you just letting them go to school is permission, well, that's BS, because they're required to go to school. The Supreme Court ruled in 1995... that schools can randomly test student athletes who are not suspected of drug use. And in 2002 ruled that all students who participate in voluntary activities like cheerleading, band, or debate could be subjected to random tests. Since then, the Bush administration has spent $8 million to help schools pay for drug testing programs. The White House hopes to spend $15 million on drug testing grants in the next fiscal year. Well, there you go. They're creating a new industry, the drug testing industry. I guess the drug testing lobby must have been out of money. They said, hey, we need some new money, guys. Send us some money. I'd like to follow the trail of that money. Illicit drug use remained steady among high school students between 1997 and 2004, with roughly half of high school seniors saying that they had tried illicit drugs at some point, according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse. So, there you go, Virginia. There you go. And my... I just got a little note that says, that passed to me that says, you know, a great protest if, you know, if you are being drug tested, accidentally spill the PP on the principal. That sounds like something my mom would tell you. You know, my mom would tell you that sounds like something I would probably do, you know. It's about 43 minutes past the hour here on All Things with Bruce Birch, and, we have had an interesting show tonight, mainly focusing on Iraq. But, you know, that whole drug testing thing is just, to me, is just another example of the abuse of power of the United States government at this point. You know, we cannot be having our children making independent decisions on their own and deciding for themselves what's best for them. We have to force them into a box, and we have to say, you cannot do this, you cannot do that. And we, you know... And also, I mean, I want to look at this too, because it creates this kind of drug testing in schools creates the kind of atmosphere with younger children. It's a conditioning thing in that, well, you know, we had to be randomly drug tested when I went to school. So what's the difference? Why can't they just come and randomly search my home? If I'm not doing anything wrong, I don't have anything to worry about, then do I? That's the kind of mentality that this creates. And I'm sorry, but I don't think it's that much of a stretch for, you know, to say on the one hand, well, it's okay to randomly drug test these kids because they're kids, and for them later, you know, 10 years later, to be okay with warrantless wiretaps or with warrantless searches or with, you know, or with drug testing that goes on when you're an adult and that you're just required. You know, but a lot of us have to are subject to that where we work already. So that's just a little bit of a psychological review of that story. We do have let's see, there's been fun, a couple minutes here. It looks like we're about ready to go into a break. I did want to sort of, you know, before we go into our last break, cover a couple, one little small thing, and that is, and I'm trying to find it at this point, and I don't know that I can. Anyway, oh yes, here it is. That apparently, ladies and gentlemen, America is waking up, and most Americans want Democrats to take control of Congress in November midterm elections. Only 34% of people who responded in a Newsweek poll, only 34% said they would prefer a Republican Congress. That means that probably 50% or greater responded that they would prefer to have a Democratic Congress. 64% are dissatisfied with the way things are going in the United States at this time, while only 30% are satisfied. And that 30%, by the way, that 30%, is just glad that the homos aren't able to get married. And the 36% who approve of the way the president is handling his job, that 36% probably never have seen a poor area of a city. So there is some good news. You're listening to All Things with Bruce Birch. It's 47 minutes after the hour, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
McGruff, the crime dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scrub, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scrub, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scrub, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle
me. It's scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Guy James. Remember me? As many of you know, I got the boot from the radio stations that carried my show a while back because I got a little too controversial for them to handle. Well, I'm back now, but I'll be doing my show 5 days a week from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time starting on March 20th. You can join us at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org. And if you like hard-hitting, thought-provoking, entertaining radio, then join us starting March 20th at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org for the new Guy James Show.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chutney.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not
there.
The same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
You're back on with All Things with Bruce First. You're not going to hear that song on right-wing radio, folks. That's a tune Zappa wrote back in the 90s, I want to say the late 80s, called The Idiot Bastard Son. The father's a Nazi. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, you know, we've been talking about all kinds of interesting things this evening. Again, focused a little bit more on the Iraq situation than I normally do because I try to get around to a lot of different things. But the reality is that, you know, today, tomorrow marks the third anniversary of the bombs, the shock and awe falling on Iraq. And you, listener, if you're listening to this program, and I both know that they cooked the books to make this one happen. We both know that 2,317 soldiers have died. To make this war happen and to create the kind of instability in the Middle East that they were looking for. What's our alternative?
at this point. Because, you know, we can sit around and raise all kinds of hell about George Bush, and, you know, that's not going to do any... Yes, it may make us feel better for the moment. But what's the alternative? What can we as individuals do to try to create the kind of situation we want to have in our country? And I, for one, believe that part of that is to get behind these citizen candidates. Because these citizen candidates are you and me, listeners. They are us. You know? And if we can get behind those folks, you know? I had a wonderful idea in the chat room a few minutes ago by the Smart Mom, and she says, forego going out to dinner once a week and donate that money to a citizen candidate. And she is absolutely fantastically right. That is one thing that you can do, that you can do at home, that's not going to hurt you a whole lot, is to forego going out and dropping $40 or $50 or whatever it is you spend on dinner on a Saturday night and shoot that money to Michael Stettler out there in California in the 24th District, or shoot it to Cindy Holmes here in the 5th District in North Carolina, or to any number of citizen candidates out there. Go into a search engine and type in citizen candidate. You'll be surprised at the results you'll get. Because, you know, the American way is not the way that George Bush is running this country. The American way, the principled way, the way that we want to strive to create in this nation, is to create a democracy here and to honor those principles that those founding fathers created so long ago. Yeah, they didn't do everything perfect either, but you know something? They did give it a try. And you know what? It's our job to honor that by giving it a try ourselves. And it's time that we do that. And it's time we do that starting tomorrow. When you wake up, revolution in every step. And that's the way that we can create the kind of society we want. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Bruce Birch. This is All Things with Bruce Birch. Every Sunday night here, 10 o'clock on the East Coast, 7 o'clock on the Left Coast. It's been great to be with you one more week. We'll be back next Sunday. Thanks to Bob Kincaid, Head On Radio Network, for supporting us, and also to the West Virginia Union of Millwrights and Carpenters for making the stream happen. Ben Birch at White Rose Society for making the stream happen. And to you, listener, for supporting the show. My name's Bruce Birch. We'll be back next week. Thanks.
It was a time I'll always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. And when the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles, we're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. And somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution, swung open, mothers hugged their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down their guns. A million innocent people lit up in the springtime air. And Mumia and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins Square. And they talked about what they do now after the revolution. Debts were all forgiven in all the neo-colonies. Soldiers left their bases, went back to their families. A non-aggression treaty was signed with every sovereign state. All the terrorist groups disbanded with no empire left to hate. And they all started planting olive trees after the revolution.